Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. Yes, I am returning with my original bumper music from season one at the request of someone who wrote in, saying that they felt that that was a little bit more uplifting and more spirited. And so I'm going to bounce around this year a little bit, I think, with different bumper musics to shake things up a bit. But I'm going to go back with my original bumper music on this podcast. This is Michael Delaware. Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. I am your host on this journey through history, and this is the beginning of season three. So I wanted to make this episode a little bit different and talk a little bit about the success of season two and also talk about the future here on this podcast and go into a little bit of details about my book that's coming out this year. And I also wanted to kind of draw a bit of a story to connect this year of 2024, which I found kind of interesting, and it might be something to reflect on for the coming year. So stick around and join me. This should be a little different of an episode than you're used to, but it's a new year and a new season. So thanks for coming along with me on this journey, and I'll be right back. Now, I like to include a little bit of history in every episode. As you know, you listen to this channel, you're here to hear some history stories. So I think I'll start today's podcast by telling you this little piece of history, and then I want to go into some of the history of this podcast in the last year and give you some statistics on what happened and how successful it was over the prior season. I have a comparison now, and also talk about my forthcoming book that is coming out in March and give you a little bit of details. Maybe I'll give you a little snippet of some of the stories that are going to be in that book. So to begin with, this is 2024, and I think we all know that this is a presidential election year, and no matter what side of the political spectrum you reside on, we all know that these types of years can be tumultuous. But I want to read you something from an election year of 150 years ago, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about it, okay? Listen to what this editor wrote in the newspaper and tell me if it sounds familiar in present day. This was written in November of 1874 by Walter Woolnough, who was the editor of a newspaper called the Michigan Tribune, and he writes, "It is not possible for anybody to misinterpret the lesson conveyed by the late election. The most obtuse, bigoted partisan, who can be impressed by no ordinary political event and whose moral blindness is such that the most palpable dishonesty could scarcely move him to doubt his party, now understands pretty thoroughly that there is something wrong. While a much larger class, who yet have faith in the general honesty of mankind, while somewhat astounded at the extent of the political upheaval, find no difficulty in understanding the lesson inculcated. It is the protest of all the classes of citizens against an administration, which supported salary bills through Congress, perjured judges, and misused bayonets, and tried to sustain them by slandering an injured people, which had just put itself forward with the insolent claim for perpetuation of power. The public had grown weary of years of rule remarkable for nothing but blundering and greed. The demand for an infinite extension of such misrule was too much for good nature. It needed the sharp answer it has received. It ought to have ended a few years ago. Indeed, it ought to never have had a political existence. It has been, almost without exception during its whole career, either stupid or corrupt. The public has gone faster and faster down the road to moral decay and ruin the past few years than one can conceive to have been possible. Certainly, no parallel in history is found to the rapid strides we have been making towards despotism. The stolid, greedy man and his corrupt minions must obey the summons of the people to pack up their traps and get down and out." And that was the end of his editorial. Now, I deliberately left out a few details in that essay so that you wouldn't know which president I was talking about, because you could pretty much take the context of the rhetoric that you hear in the present-day media about the last several different presidents of the United States during their administration, the end of their term, whatnot. And it's coming from both sides of the political spectrum saying the same type of rhetoric about each opponent. And it is pretty interesting to look back historically and say, wait a minute, we have been here before. And the only reason I'm saying this is not to make a rant about any side of politics. What I'm trying to point out is this is a presidential election year, and we have been here before. And this country has been through this many, many times. The only difference in present day is we have not only print media, we have media coming right out of your pocket on your telephone. You have YouTube, you have radio, you have anything that you tune into out there at all, and you're going to be pounded with it this year. And if anything is more of an example, look at 2020, look at 2016. It's going to get ugly. It's going to be loud and obnoxious. But take a step back and say, you know what? 150 years ago, they were doing the same thing. And so just clear your head and try to look at things without getting into bayonets drawn against your neighbors. And I don't really care what political side you are on in this upcoming presidential election, but let's keep our sabers in their sheaths and let's talk about whatever you want to talk about in regard, but do it civilly. And that's the only message I would say that history teaches us, because when I look at this, it's like, wow, I saw this and I was like, wow, this is pretty much what I've been hearing, depending on whatever side you tune into, in videos on YouTube or reading it on blogs and the newspapers or tuning into television channels. One side or the other is saying pretty much the same type of thing, even in present day. And it's just like the message is different. Some of the details vary, but it's the same thing. It's the same type of outrage when things don't go quite well. And I think it's worse probably in a time right now when we've had several rough years. I mean, I know people are hurting right now. Financially, they're struggling. So, you know, we have to all admit that there's some bad leadership going on. And it may not be just the president. It's probably a lot of other people involved, too, that we need to take a look at as citizens to make sure that this does not continue forward. Because I know myself, I've experienced a lot of financial struggles this year. And I know there's a lot of families out there. And there's a lot of messaging out there that is coming forward. I mean, just look at that song that recently went viral by Oliver Anthony in present day in 2023. You know, there's two family households working full time and they're still not making ends meet. You know, so we all have to be diligent about it. And so let's look at this article that I just read. Who was he talking about? Maybe you Googled on your phone or something since he started this, but this was actually not a presidential year. It was in the middle of President Grant's, Ulysses S. Grant's, 2 years into his first term, this election of 1874. And there was a lot of upset about the way Grant was running the country, and it effectively ended Reconstruction, which was ongoing since the close of the Civil War. It had started under Andrew Johnson, and then Grant was the president to follow Andrew Johnson. What's interesting to note about this is that Walter Woolnough, who wrote this, was a Whig originally, and he was one of the founders of the Republican Party, and Grant was a Republican president. So he was outraged at the corruption that he was observing in the Grant presidency. Grant himself had a severe alcohol problem, which is well known and documented, and he wasn't that great of an administrator as a president. And so he left the running of a lot of his administration to people that got him elected. Sound familiar? We've seen that before in history. I'll just leave it at that. So it's not the first time that we've had outrage over a presidency. So just wanted to read you that just as a historical note, looking at 2024, because we all have that going ahead of us this year. And just remember that, hey, whenever you hear something ugly, this is not the first time this has happened in history. It's not the first time someone or some news outlet has gone full outrageous on a presidential candidate. And it's also interesting to note Grant did get elected to a second term despite all of this. So it is something just to reflect on in history and try to do the best for your families, depending on whatever the outcome is this year, because it's going to be a different year, most certainly than other years of recent. So that being said, let's take a look at my podcast this year. So Spotify, every year when you host a podcast with them, they give you how your podcast did in the prior year, and they usually release those statistics in November. So I've had this information since then. I may have mentioned it on a couple of other episodes. But some of the salient points, very interesting statistics they gave me. I don't know how meaningful it is on every spectrum, but let's just go through some of them. 86% of my listeners discovered the show in 2023. My show was streamed in 19 countries, the U.S. representing 96% of the total streams, which is typical because I'm in the United States. Most listeners were in the U.S. and Canada. And I've done a deep dive into that before, not on this show, but I've done some looking into it. I do have listeners that are over in England and all the way over in Asia and a lot of different countries, even in Latin America. So it would take too long to go through all of them. And how many of those are actually listening every week, who knows? Maybe they just tuned in one time to see something that interested them in one episode that I shared on social media. But I may have a few followers over that part of the world. So if you are listening, thank you for sticking around for season three. So the listeners' podcast genres that liked my podcast typically enjoyed true crime, history, and comedy. That's an interesting list of top three genres. They also like rock music, pop music, and contemporary country, which is, I guess, pretty broad in itself, all three of those categories. 48% of the listeners shared the show with somebody else by text, which I found that very interesting. 22% shared it by Facebook, 20% shared it directly by a link, and 3% shared it by Snapchat, and 7% by some other method. And some of those may be my sharing it on social media, because I do share links to my episodes on Facebook a lot, and the other is probably Nextdoor. That's an app that, or a social media platform locally here that I share episodes on. So in 2023, I saw a 78% increase in new listeners. I saw a 141% increase in streams. That's people listening on different devices. And I saw a 166% increase in followers to the podcast. And I had a 43% increase from season two over season one in minutes created on the podcast. And the podcast was in the top 10 podcasts for 355 of my fans out there. It was in the top five for 258 of my fans. And it was number one for 102 fans. So thank you, everybody. I'm very pleased that you're listening to the show and enjoying it so much. So that is just the beginning, obviously, of this show. And I'm hopefully, you know, the first 2 years, I've learned a tremendous amount from doing this. And I have to probably take a minute to thank a lot of my guests that have been on repeatedly over the first two seasons. They've been on multiple times, and they've been very supportive of my work. And they kind of brought a new dynamic to the show in a lot of ways, because they've, in many ways, lifted me up when I needed new material or I needed a boost on a new look on the show. And these guests, the ones that are repeating, now I always have a lot of different guests on. Some people only come on one time because of their schedule. They're very difficult to get. But I got to thank Dave Eddy, for one. He's been on the show a few times this year. Jim Jackson, Bobby Mathis, incredible support from her on this show. Amber Rose Hammond has been both as a guest and behind the scenes as a friend, giving me a lot of guidance as an author. So a shout out to Amber Rose out there. She's also made some suggestions that I followed up on, and we share information between each other whenever we're in it. We're both very busy people. She's got her whole fan thing going on with her people out there. So she runs her own podcast, I found out this year. And not as much as mine is aired, but she has a podcast out there. Some of the other local folks here in Battle Creek, T.R. Shaw has been tremendously supportive. I can reach out to T.R. anytime I'd like to have him on as a guest, and he usually makes time for me. Mac McCullough from the Willard Library has been on a few times this year. And Andrew Noland has been on a couple of times. He usually comes on with Bobby Mathis. Mike Cox from the Eaton County Historical Commission. A lot of fun to have him on as a guest. Man, he has an amazing voice. Brian Young, who's been on my show a couple times over the first two seasons, he is an author now of a biography on Del Shannon, and I'll probably have him on again this year to talk about music history because he's just so fascinating. And a couple of other newer historical societies that I connected with this year was Leah Richard from the Vicksburg Historical Society over there, and Rhiannon Cezanne from the Berrien County Historical Commission. And of course, there's authors like Blaine Pardoe that I can't thank enough. He has always finds time to fit in his super, super busy schedule to come on the show when I ask. And sometimes it takes a week or two to get him on schedule. But he's always a great guest, and his books are always a draw for the public. He's been on the show three times. I think he was only on once this year, maybe twice. But definitely I'll have him back on. His history books are still something that people talk about. So he's always one that I want to bring back on, and I'll certainly have him on as a guest this year. And I should throw a shout out to Dennis Skupinski from the Michigan's Military Heritage Museum over in Jackson. He has been on the show multiple times. He came on more in season one than he did this year. He was only on one time this year, I think. But fun guest. He's always very informative. If you ever want to know about certain military history, particularly World War I or the War of 1812, he will provide you with more information than you ever realized. Very educated man, and they have a great museum over there. I want to try to make a trip over there maybe this year and do some filming for my YouTube channel because I've been anxious to get over and see their exhibits. So all of my guests make this show a lot more interesting, and it gives another dynamic for the listening audience. And I think that you guys enjoy some of those episodes because you get to hear about some of the different museums or the different authors and different aspects of history. And I try to keep a balance of different ways to look at history in our Southwest Michigan region. And I've tried to endeavor to switch subject matters so that it is different every week, and give you a new story to look at so that when you're going around and you're traveling around through Southwest Michigan, you get the idea that, hey, you know, there's history in different places. There's different villages and towns. They all have their own unique history. Then there's all these wonderful people that have been through history. Then there's been all of these different events throughout time that have a significance sometimes to location or to the whole region in itself that create a great interest, and it's really interesting to know about. And there's just so many different layers to history when you slice and dice it from that different levels. And of course, true crime is something that I started trying to introduce here in season two a little bit more because I have a true crime book coming out this year. And it's a project that I've been working on for a couple of years. I started writing some of these stories in 2021 when I was doing my YouTube channel. And I came across some of the early pieces of material for these stories, and I was becoming a better researcher at that time, too. So I was learning how to be a researcher for stories, taking a deep dive into history, and finding ways to learn and follow a data trail through old newspapers and things like that. And I've learned a lot from other people that have done the same type of thing. And I would probably say there's two or three people that really have helped me understanding how to track down local history. And one of them is Bobby Mathis, who is kind of just as much as a history nut as I am, but probably more so would be Jim Jackson. He is more of a genealogist in terms of his research pattern, and he connected with me with a lot of different ways to follow a genealogical trail from one of his talks that he gave at the Battle Creek Regional History Museum. I believe it was last year. So those people have had a profound influence on me. Plus also my relationships with other authors that are doing the same type of thing that inspired me. And I would have to say, I would give a lot of thanks to folks like Ambrose Hammond and Blaine Pardoe, who encouraged me along the way. Also Diane Stamfler, who wrote the books on Michigan's historic lighthouses from the ghost and haunted perspective. Very wonderful lady to spend time with and talk, and she's always been a great source for material out there for me when I want to shoot an email and run an idea by her. So those group of people, plus probably a few others that I'm forgetting right now. And of course, Mac McCullough at the library has also been a wonderful resource for my work at the museum, plus projects that I'm working on locally for myself in terms of my own research. So the libraries are great people to connect with if you're trying to do research on a history book for yourself, because they can at least be the guide through the material that's available out there. And of course, the Willard Library Archives online has been a tremendous resource for me, not only for my own writing, but for my show here, Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. So they have an archive of books and material online that I can access from my desktop. So I don't always have to go down to the library and check out a book or dig through their papers. And I do a lot of my work that way from their research on their lines. And then from that, I've learned to navigate around the gaps that they have in their archives and find places that maybe had the material I'm looking for. And I've gone to other sources for that. Newspaperarchives.com has been a great resource for me. And I just signed up for newspapers.com, and I've done a comparison on those two. There's some benefits to newspapers.com, so if you guys like that, it's the benefit for that platform is it's very user-friendly, and you can clip very easily, and it's not so buggy. But their database for at least my area, Battle Creek, is not as extensive as some of the other ones out there. Like the Willard Library is the best database on Battle Creek newspapers, and that's free if you have a library card. But if you're looking for more data on other parts of the state, I would go with newspapersarchives.com, because their database is a little bit better, at least for my area. But I use all three because I'm now trying to cover a whole region. And I also use independent databases that are available through libraries, like Kalamazoo has some online. There's the State of Michigan Library has a collection of newspapers online from different areas. Only a few of those on that collection are from Southwest Michigan. But I do explore those for topics of stories and doing my own research on a story. So that's kind of a quick sidetrack on from my book. But my book that's coming out is coming out on March 11th, and it is called Victorian Southwest Michigan True Crime. Okay, and I'll put the link in the show note description so you can sign up for an email from the publisher. I am currently working, I've got to do some work on my website in the coming weeks, and I don't know that I'll have that announcement yet, but I want to set up a pre-order platform on my website, and I've been talking to other authors that have this set up, and I'm using their suggestions to set this platform up. So I'll be working on that in the coming weeks, and I hope to have an announcement on that very soon where you can, if you want to buy the book ahead of time, you can buy it, and I'll reserve it for you, and when it comes in, I'll send you a signed copy. That's my goal. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until it comes out from the publisher. But it will be available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and a lot of other online platforms when it comes out. I have a whole schedule of book signings and events that I've been working on the past couple of months setting up for the post-release period. So I'll go over that calendar a little bit with you before we end off today. So the book, Victorian Southwest Michigan True Crime, has 17 stories in it. Originally, I had intended to put 18 stories in it. And I'll tell you how it came down to 17 instead of 18 was really the editing restrictions of History Press publications. They have certain parameters that you sign up for when you sign a contract with them as an author. There is a word count limitation that you can only go to a certain level. And they prefer you to be around 45,000 words, I think it was in the contract. I'm just paraphrasing because I'm going from memory. But they told me, you know, you can go beyond that. You can go up to as high as 60, but that's about as max. You can't go beyond 60. Well, I ended up turning in a manuscript that was like 65,000 words. So it became a battle of trying to crunch words down in the book without losing the story. And ultimately, to get it down at least below the 60,000 mark, then I had to, in the final end, make a decision to pull one of the stories. So I did that. I ended up making that hard decision towards the end of the editing process, and I said, I'll just use this story in another book. And I've been working on another book, and that second book is almost as a core ready with the stories selected and researched now, and most of them have been written. In fact, since between Christmas and New Year's, I pretty much put the blinders on and shut out the world and just spent most of my time just writing. And I was able to put together four complete stories during that time period that are hopefully will go into the next book that I really am excited about, because some of those stories have been head scratchers for me for a long time. One of them in particular that I'm, it's not going to be in this book, it was in another, it'll be in the next book, but it was one that I had only found a few sentences about the murder in one reference of one article, and they named the person who did it, but I could not find any more. And I searched every database I could think of that to try to pull up more information about what happened. What was the trial? What was the trial transcripts? What was the details of the crime and all that? Just, I know he, you know, the guy murdered his wife, but what happened? You know, what happened to him? Did he go to prison? What happened, you know? And this, the long story short of it, and I head scratched on that story for 2 years. I would pick it up, do a research, I'd run in the same dead ends, and I'd set it aside. Say, darn it, I can't find anything on it. I'll shove that in a folder, and I'll move on to another story, and I'd work on that other story and find all the information I was looking on. And over the holidays, I said, you know what? I really want to tackle that one. I've got to find out what's wrong, why, what's missing. And this goes into learning how to be a better researcher. What ultimately happened was I decided to take a more abstract approach to looking for the source of that story. And I went through some other articles of the same time period that mentioned groups of people that were likely, this person was likely involved with. And without telling you the whole story, that's what I'll tell you. And I found a name that was very similar to the name in the original story that I found, the two-line story about this guy murdering his wife. And I took a hunch and I said, I wonder if they misspelled his name in that first story, and that's why I've been running into this brick wall, and that his real name is this spelling. And so I looked up that guy's name and the spelling, and I cross-referenced it with keywords like murder, and I found the treasure trove. And yes, I was correct. My hunch paid off. So I found the whole story. I did a whole deep dive. I had his name completely incorrect because they had completely incorrectly put that into that story before. And I should have known better, because that wasn't the first time in that same article that I found misspelled names. And I ran into dead ends on a couple of the stories. One of the stories in the book that is coming out this year in March was very similar in its research pattern. And that is the story called The Death of a Giant. And this is the story of Robert Mullineaux, who was a Civil War hero. He was a very big man, well over 6 feet tall, 6.5 feet from what I was able to determine. Stood like a towering, you know, Reacher-sized guy. You know, if you follow the Reacher series on Amazon, he was a big guy. And apparently a very nice man in general, but he wasn't afraid to fight. I mean, that was why he was such a good soldier. He'd been wounded in the Civil War. So he wasn't one of the Civil War soldiers that went off and served and really didn't see combat. He actually was wounded in combat, and there's a whole bit of a story about that. I didn't find much about his actual service career, but I put what there was available into the story. But in the end, he walked into this bar and went in to have lunch when he was in town one day. He had a family of 5 little kids. He was in town doing some personal business, probably picking up some supplies. He lived up in Johnstown Township, came into Battle Creek for probably some supplies or something, stopped off to have lunch, and ran into another Civil War buddy. And they sat down, and they're waiting for their food to be ordered in this saloon-type place in the basement of a clothing store that was once stood near the intersection of McCamley Street and Michigan Avenue in present day. and which was Main Street and Jefferson back in the day. And so he goes in there, and there's a group of men playing cards in this other room. And one of the men playing cards was an older man, and the rest of these guys were younger guys, and they didn't want him to stop playing cards. The old man said, "I'm done," threw his cards on the table. He'd lost a round, and he paid up, and he said, "I'm done." You know, they were playing for beer money at that point. And the other guys refused to let him leave. They got into a big confrontation. Robert Molyneux stepped in, defused it for a little bit, and then they still wouldn't let the guy leave after Robert left. So they got into a more heated exchange, and then Robert stepped in again, told him to stop picking on the old man, and it got into this big fight, and Robert basically kicked everybody's butt. And then one of the guys who got his butt kicked stood up and stabbed him in the gut. And so that whole story is in the book, and it's kind of a dramatic one and a little bit of a sad one, but I tried to put in the context of the period. And the man who killed him was probably one of the most evil characters that I found in history. I would say he's definitely in the top three of some of the evil characters that you'll see in this book that were perpetrators. Another story I have covered in detail on this podcast before is the story of the Haviland children murders. And I did a YouTube video of my exploring and looking for some of the stories of that murder, where the children were buried. I was not successful in finding where the children, their graves. I found the cemetery, but they were in unmarked graves is what I determined. But this is a story of a woman that murdered her three children. And it happened right here in Battle Creek. In fact, it happened right across from where Full Blast is. So if you're in Battle Creek and you're ever at Full Blast and you want to and kind of know where the murder happened, it would have been in an old shanty that once stood on the grounds of where the food manufacturing place at Kellogg's is, across the street on the lawn, closer to the railroad tracks, which is now just an open lawn area. And that was where the incident happened. And there's a whole story connected with that. It's probably one of the longest stories in the book because it begins with her life over in Washtenaw County. And I was able to research her travels all the way over here, her life here in Battle Creek, the incident leading up to her making the decision to poison and kill three of her children. She had six in total. And she killed her three youngest children, and how she almost got away with it. And then she got sent to prison with her lover. Her lover got sent to a different prison. 2 years later, he died in prison. And then she managed to persuade the wardens over time to put her in a more favorable position in prison. And she became a housekeeper, and eventually she became the caretaker of their children, which is really absurd when you consider that she killed her own three children. So there's the whole story with that, her release eventually from prison when she should have been in there for life, and how she got out. And she basically was a bit of a manipulator. Not a bit of a manipulator. She really was a big manipulator. And she took advantage of the culpability of men during that time period that thought that women were not capable of murder in general. And so there's a tendency to believe that the fairer sex could not possibly commit murder, and that she was unjustly imprisoned and unjustly charged and unjustly sentenced to prison. And she was able to convince them based on those frames of mind that was prevalent during the Victorian era, that men during the Victorian era considered in general that murder was a masculine trait and that women were not capable of murder. And that was a common thread of the way the social understanding of things were. So you have a few cases in this book where women have gotten away with murder or not been a suspect when they really should have been, or they got off. They basically got one of them. There's one story at the very end of the book, which is called The Deadly Porridge of Mary Sanderson, which will be the last story in the book. And my take on it, after I read every bit of trial transcript, and she was in court a lot. She was sued a few times, and she sued other people. So I searched down and tracked down all of the material that was available on each of the suits that connected with this whole thing. And part of it was the crime. She was in an interesting position where she was charged with the murder of her husband, putting ground glass in his food. And she managed to get acquitted in that trial. But the prosecuting attorney was so convinced that she was guilty. And when you look at the evidence, it's pretty hard not to think that she wasn't guilty, you know? I mean, she was the only one that was capable of doing what happened. I mean, they found the glass in the man's stomach. He died under really strange circumstances, you know, and she married him. You know, she was in her 20s and she married him and he was in his 80s. And it's looked like she was gold digging, you know, which what we would call a gold digger today, because he was a pretty wealthy man for his time. And so it was a whole these circumstances that go into the story. And I don't want to spoil the whole story for you, but she got off and then she got charged again under a different charge, which I guess was permitted during that time. And she got acquitted a second time from the same type of temperament of the jury. It was an all-male jury. She sat there and wore the prettiest dress she could find, looked pretty, and acted like this meek little woman throughout the whole trial. And that was what the jury saw. And so it wasn't a matter of whether the jury was convinced of whether she did it or not. They were pretty much convinced of her innocence from the moment she sat down. And with the framework of mindset of that time period, that women were incapable of murder. So that was kind of the stuff that you're going to find in the story. So those are three stories I've selected just here randomly from the book. There are 17 in total. Some of them are gruesome and brutal. Some of them are more interesting to see the outcome of the court cases. When I found the cases on the court, I would elaborate on them. There's one particular story in the book that takes place over in Jackson, Michigan, and it has connections with Marshall a little bit, but it has a big connection with Union City. And so that story actually kind of blows over into Union City, and it goes into mostly around Jackson and the area around Jackson. And then there's one story that took place between Coldwater and Eaton Rapids. You know, so they're all going between different cities, and the story is kind of told from the two different ends of where it happened. The murder happened in Eaton Rapids, but the story begins over essentially in Coldwater and parts of the area around the Eaton Rapids area. But there's one story that takes place in Marshall. There's several of them that occurred in Battle Creek because that's where I'm based out of, and that was my first dive into researching stories, so I wanted to include those. But I've got some that are over in Berrien County. There's one that occurred up in Hastings. There's a very large story down in Colon, Michigan. And then there's two stories that connect. One that takes place entirely in Coldwater, and is the other one I was telling you about that connects Coldwater and Eaton Rapids. And then there's one small story over in the Kalamazoo area. So that book is being released on March 11th. And it's coming out through History Press, which is a division of Arcadia Publishing. If you go on over to my website at michaeldelaware.com, there is a link on there for calendar of events, which is in the top banner, and that exclusively has my calendar for this book release tour for 2024. And I put all the dates of the places that I'm going to be at selling books and doing, some of them I'll be doing speaking, some I'll just have a booth, depending on the event. But let me just kind of quickly go down my calendar here with you on some of the early dates in March. The first speaking engagement that I have after the book's release is on Thursday, March 14th, and that's going to be at the Willard Library. And I'll be doing a presentation on one of the stories from the book, and then I'll be doing book signings following that. And that is an evening event at 6 p.m. at the Willard Library. And you'll start seeing the links for that showing up on Facebook very soon. You can go to Michael Delaware Author, and I'll be originating the event from there. I've designed the graphics already and sent them over to Willard, but because it's the holidays, nobody's answering. So I'll probably be getting that posted on Facebook in the first couple weeks of January. But that's going to be on March 14th. Then that first weekend after the book comes out is the Kalamazoo Living History Show. And so good timing for me. The book came out on the 11th, and the Living History Show is the 16th and 17th of March. And that's a two-day show over at the Kalamazoo Expo Center for basically anything before, I think it's 1890 or something, that is permitted at the show. So this collection of stories on the Victorian era was right in their wheelhouse, and they're allowing me to come in and sign books. So I'll have a booth there for 2 days. So definitely come find me there if you're looking for something really cool to do. And there's a, I think there's an entry fee when you go there as an attendee, but it's not much. And you can spend the whole day there. They've got concessions, and there's, you really want to spend probably 3-4 hours walking around that place because it is huge. It is one of the biggest shows, and it's pretty nice. Usually it's on a cold winter weekend. Every time I've been there, it's been last year when I went, it was a blizzard in Kalamazoo at that time. So I'm looking forward to doing that show. The next event after that I have is on March 19th, which is a few days after that event closes out. That's going to be at the Colon Township Library, and I'll be talking about the story that's in Colon, Michigan. That's at 6 p.m. on a Tuesday evening, and I'll be sharing the links on that very soon. The next event after that is Saturday, March 23rd. I will be at the Helen Warner branch of the Willard Library doing another presentation on another story from the book and book signing there. Following that, on the same day, that one at Helen Warner is at 10 a.m., later that afternoon at 2 p.m., I will be at New Community Books in Marshall at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. And then on that Sunday, March 24th, I'm going to be over in Albion at Sterling Books and Brew doing a book signing and speaking event at 2 p.m. Details on that will be coming out hopefully in the coming weeks about what they have plans for. I'm working with two different bookstores there, so they have their own marketing team I have to work with on that. And that's what I have scheduled for March. I've got several dates in April. If you're interested in taking a little bit of a class through Kellogg Community College Lifelong Learning Program, I will be teaching a couple of different classes with them this year. We ended up choosing two different dates in April. And I will be teaching a class on how to research history stories on April 3rd. And I'll also be talking about some of the true crime stories from my book. So you can come to that, and I will have books available for sale there. And that's on April 3rd and also April 18th. And one of the early events that I wanted to tell you about that I'm working with, now this is one I created with some other author friends of mine. And I reached out to Judy Krasnow, who has been on the show this year talking about the Jacktown book on the history of the Jackson Prison. She connected me with an event venue that is adjacent to the old prison in Jackson. And I spoke with those folks. They were so excited about the idea of having me there to do a book signing. They said, why don't we do some kind of big event and that sort of thing? And they'll make the venue available for free. And I said, well, what if we did a true crime symposium? And I invited a few other author friends of mine to come in, and we can do some talking about different true crime stories around Michigan. And this is kind of snowballing and taking off. I have three other authors in addition to myself that will be at this event signing their books. Myself and one other author is going to be speaking there on some of the true crime stories. The other two, I don't know if they want to speak yet, so I'm not going to give you all their names. Judy is going to be there. So you can come out and get her book as well as mine, but I'll reveal the other two authors as the event gets a little bit closer. But that's going to be exciting, and I've already gotten the graphic approved for that group, and I'll be sharing that on Facebook very soon. I'm just waiting to hear back from one of the other authors to confirm that it looks good for them. And then I have a lot of other different speaking events. I've got one in Kalamazoo. I've got one coming up in April in Athens. And I also have one in Hastings scheduled for that month. And you can find it on calendar of events for michaeldelaware.com. And I'll put the link, direct link to that in the show note description. So if you want to check it out there, but just head on over to michaeldelaware.com when you get a minute and look at the list, because there's a lot of other listings on there for April. And I've already got a few interesting events scheduled for May. I have one scheduled for May 9th down in St. Joseph, Michigan. And this is with the Berrien County Historical Association, and they are putting together a Berrien County wine and murder event, which is going to be me speaking about 3 or 4 of the different stories out of my book, maybe 5. I don't remember what we agreed on. And then we'll be pairing up wines with each of the stories. So that should be pretty interesting. And there's limited seating for that event. So as soon as I have details on where you can register, I will share that with everybody on my Facebook page called Michael Delaware Author. If you haven't yet gone over there and liked it, you should do that because that's where I'll be posting a lot of these events and sharing from that source throughout the year as they come up. And this is just through May. I've got another speaking engagement in Galesburg in May on May 15th. And then on May 18th, I'll be down in Union City doing an event with my great friends there at the Union City Society for Historic Preservation with Bobby Mathis and her whole gang of history fans down there. So should be a lot of fun. That link is already out on Facebook and people are already signing up for it. So should be a lot of fun when that comes around in May. And I'll be scheduling events as far into June as I can. I do have events and programs that I'm working around with the museum this year. I'm still the marketing director for the museum in 2024, so I have to balance my own personal schedule around with them. But there's going to be an exciting year with a lot of cool things to come see in history, and I'm hoping to make each one of my public showings to be a little different from the next. That way you can have a little bit of fun if you want to follow me around on this tour. And of course, share any of these speaking engagements that you'd like to with any of your friends and family. And any help that you can offer me out there on getting my book sold this year would be great. Hopefully it'll be, I'm hoping the book will be a great success and inspire me to get the second one finished and into the publisher for maybe either late this year or following early part of next year. We'll see how this goes. See what the publisher says on that. And as the final closeout of this episode today, I wanted to talk to you guys about the schedule that I've got for Tales of Southwest Michigan Past moving forward in 2024. Now, every episode is, I do as much effort as I can into making it as entertaining as possible and interesting. The past year, I did 3 episodes a week through the entire year, and there was a total of 157 episodes in 2023. And as you can imagine, that takes a tremendous amount of time to be able to produce at that level. And I was doing that at the same time as trying to write this book, write books and write material, research for stories for the podcast, and also manage marketing and programs I was creating for the museum. And I did a whole bunch of museum events this year. And if you're on the museum mailing list, emailing list, you're going to see or probably have already seen an email of a year in review of all the events that we put on in 2023. And when I started looking and putting all those photos together for the museum newsletter, I was quite amazed, even myself, at how many events that we put on the calendar and completed successfully throughout the year. And it was quite a busy year. We had something going every month at the museum, including some major epic events like Del Shannon Weekend, for example, and Tales of Christmas Past, which was a 2-show event, and then Phenomenal Woman that we did, which was a big sold-out crowd, a lot of preparation for some of these big events. And we did children's programs through the summer and all kinds of things that we tried to keep things different as we went through the year at the museum calendar. And a lot of that work I'm carrying on my shoulders exclusively. I have some help with certain events, and I've got volunteers from different places like the Union City folks and some other people at the museum that are helping out with putting on the events, but a lot of the coordination for the marketing and preparation and writing for it falls on my shoulders right now. And hopefully that will change in the coming year. I'll get some additional assistance with some of those projects moving forward. But the schedule for this year's podcast, I am going to maintain the 3-episode-a-week release up until the beginning of March. And when my book is released on March 11th, I'm going to be scaling back to 2 episodes a week. And it may change to 1 episode a week, depending on how hectic things get. There are a total of 290 episodes for Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past since I first began. So there is quite a library of episodes to explore for any listener that is coming new into the podcast. And I can tell that people are starting from the very beginning when they find out about my podcast, because those early shows that I did at the beginning of last year are getting more views than the current ones because they're working their way forward, and that's kind of how people do things. So that's completely understood. They don't jump around. I do the same thing when I'm picking up a new podcast. I try to start as early as I can and and start from the beginning and move forward so I get the whole story of everything that's going on with the podcast when I have time to listen. But there's a lot of material out there, and I did 157 of those episodes this year in 2023, and it was a lot of work. And I tell you, at times it was easy, and times it was very hard. You face all kinds of challenges when you're trying to produce your own show. I had everything from power outages to deal with throughout the year to weather delays, and you sit down to record a podcast one day and suddenly you can't because there's construction in the street outside your window and they're making all kinds of racket and noise, and you know it's just going to come across on the microphone no matter how good you try to dampen that sound. And then there's other problems in scheduling with, you know, the whole dynamic of scheduling with guests and working all those details out that comes with the back story of putting on a show like this. And then it's just the time for research and putting the material together. And frankly, there have been times where I've been really, really exhausted. And it has put it has had an effect on certain areas of my life. Like, I used to produce a lot of videos on my YouTube channel, and I have not been able to produce as many videos this year as I had done in previous years. Now, part of that was from my commitments with the museum, but part of it is also my commitment to this podcast. So I want to try to scale back the quantity of episodes to two per week instead of three this coming year. And I'll continue doing three per week up until the book comes out because I can manage that. That's only a couple of months. And then I'll be going back to two. I may scale down to one a week after that point, moving forward, and then pick it up towards the end of the year. I don't know. So I'll be making more announcements on that as I go along. But that's essentially what I've got. My goal is to have at least 110 episodes this year on the podcast. And that if I did the pace that I've scheduled out with three per month up until March and then two per month after that, and then I'm probably going to take the last 2 weeks of the year off and there won't be an episode in those last 2 weeks of the year. I've seen a lot of other podcasts do that, and now I understand why. The last 2 years, trying to manage this schedule during the holidays was a bit of a challenge. Plus, I do that big holiday program every year at the museum now, and that happens right in the middle of December typically, and it's really quite a challenge to balance out the podcast episodes at that time too. And I want to make sure that the episodes that I do put out are ones that I've had time to really a little bit more time to research and put out a good quality and interesting episode for you. Otherwise, I'm trying to just grab something that is a story that I'm telling the story of and making it interesting, but it may not have been the top of my list to tell. And I want to be able to tell more true crime stories this year, and those take some time to research. And I'll probably tell a few from my upcoming book, as well as tell some more stories from the book that I've got out and put those out on the podcast a little bit. I don't want to share all the stories because I want you guys to buy the book, but that's my plan. So that's where we're at, and I probably have more announcements as we move forward. This has been a different episode than before. I wanted to give you a little bit of a history snippet, give you a little bit of outlook on the new year. I hope that wasn't too dark and threw you off at the beginning of the episode. I don't really want to get into politics about it. I just want everybody to take a step back this year and say, look, this has happened before. In fact, it's happened 150 years ago before. And, you know, we need to all be civil going into 2024, no matter what side of the political spectrum you are. And let's just keep it civil on social media. And I think people have learned a lot about that in the last two election cycles. For presidential elections, that they're a lot more cautious, particularly after COVID and all of the experiences this country went through with that. There's a lot of more people being cautious about what they say and do on social media, and I have to dampen my own self at times. And it's just really learning to look at it and take a step back and saying that the media and the print media has long been a source of getting people riled up about things. They're good at giving little pieces of information about a story and getting people fired up about something without giving them a chance to really research and find out what was actually said in its entirety, what was actually done. And it's usually thrown at you to be a distraction from something else. And that is something that I've learned over the years. When you get caught up in a sensational media cycle. Well, what are they trying to get you to not look at right now? And it's the same with every presidency. And it's the same, you know, I'm talking about, you know, presidential elections going all the way back to the Bush administration. And even into the Reagan years, there was a lot of this stuff going on. So I've seen a lot of different things that I'm sure you have as well. And if you take an objective stand back from it and look at it in perspective, let's make 2024 a great year for everybody. And let's not let somebody else or an outside influence make it a bad year for anybody. That was the whole intention of bringing up a little bit of history about elections. And I'm really excited about my new book. I hope you guys are true crime fans out there, as the podcast survey says you are, because I'm hoping you're going to enjoy this book, and I'm hoping that it'll be something that you enjoy later. I don't know that I'm always going to be writing true crime books. I've got another whole collection of stories that I want to do about Calhoun County specifically, and then I have another book in mind that is true crime related that's a little bit more broader across the state about an incident and a series of incidents that happened in the state of Michigan. But I also wanted to be able to release books that are on historical perspective of uplifting stories too, like people that had tremendous success that you don't hear about, you know, and I've told you some of those stories on this podcast. And I'm always amazed when I uncover one of them and I tell you a story that I've researched and I go, wow, you guys got to hear this. And that's the kind of stuff I'd like to be able to put into books as well, because it's inspirational to other generations. And I think we can learn the lessons of the ingenuity of the past by reading about the stories of these people and what they did and how they overcame obstacles to achieve their goals. And if I can put together a history book that maybe is a collection of stories about those types of people from a different perspectives and package it all into a really good collection of stories, that's kind of a book that I have floating out there in my sketch of future books that I'd like to put together. So stick around with me on this podcast in the future, and maybe we'll take that journey together, and I'll be able to share that information with you too. But I have obtained a lot of material from the work on this podcast, as well as my work on my YouTube channel, that has put me constantly in touch with digging and digging and digging for stories of history. And I'd like for other people to benefit from some of those deep dives into researching that I've done on some of it. And some of them are very fascinating stories, as you probably have enjoyed in listening to this podcast somewhere along the line, and particularly if you're listening to this episode. So thanks for listening. I appreciate you following along with me throughout 2023. It was a remarkable year, and I look forward to an even greater year in 2024. And I hope that you all have a wonderful, prosperous, safe, and healthy new year moving forward, and make it an exciting year and fabulous year for yourself personally and for your families. And that's really my New Year's wish for you. And I hope that the stories that I tell on this podcast will inspire you to share with others, and inspire you to tell and relate the stories to others, and maybe use some of the stories as words of encouragement for people that you may run across in life. Maybe there's something in one of the stories that I will tell this year, or that I've told in the past 290 episodes or so forth, that are inspirational. And I'd like to think that there are some of those moments within the context of the work that I've done so far. That being said, if you'd like to reach out to me, you can find me at michaeldelaware.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. And check out my calendar of events. Once again, it's at that same website, michaeldelaware.com. Head on over to Facebook and hit the like button on Michael Delaware Author and follow me on that page, because that's where I'll be posting a lot of my announcements through the Facebook. And that will pop up on your Facebook calendar when you say you're interested in an event. And as always, if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a rating or review on whatever app that you are listening on. And until next time, when we take another journey into yesterday and we explore even more fascinating tales of Southwest Michigan's past, thank you for listening. And I'll leave you with the bumper music that you were all happy to hear in season one. And by the way, the artist that is performing this music is Adrian Crutchfield. And this is Funk Jam number 2. Happy New Year, everybody.